You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect. Through this series called Wounded, looking at the hurt that we have, the wounds that we have inside. And last week we talked about, we'll come back to what we talked about last week, but this idea of hurt is something that I think is universal. I was actually talking to Kendra last night or this morning and just saying how, you know, I don't need to convince you that you hurt. A lot of times I need to convince you of things. It's important to love your wife as Christ loved the church. It's important to give to others. I mean, those are things that I have to convince you of. Nobody needs to be convinced that you're hurting. And a lot of times when we're hurting, and what a powerful worship set to come to this issue. I mean, the band and Kendra put that worship order together, and it's just, I love it because we can worship through this stuff. But this idea of hurt, one of the things that we deal with is, you know, why doesn't God just give me what I want? Why doesn't God, if he loves me, and we touched on this a little bit last week, and we talked about asking questions and how it's okay to question God, and I left it open like that. I didn't answer any questions, but just said it's okay to ask questions of God. And one of the questions we ask is, you know, what if we got, if God loves me, why didn't he give me what I want? Why doesn't it work out for me? Why aren't things good? Why, you know, why can't I be happy? And the great theologian James Eugene Carey once addressed this issue about, you know, what would it be like if God did give us everything we want? And so he actually compiled a video, and so please watch as James Eugene Carey shares a little bit about what would happen if God did in fact give us everything that we wanted.
At this spot during The Point, we watched a scene from the movie Bruce Almighty starring Jim Carrey. In this particular scene, Bruce is given the task of answering prayer requests, and he gets overwhelmed by the mass of them, so instead of answering them individually, he just says yes to all of the requests. Now we pick up The Point following that video clip.
So they at the end there, now everybody's happy. Well, what goes on, if you're not familiar with the movie Bruce Almighty, Bruce Nolan is an average TV reporter in Buffalo, New York, and God visits him and gives him all of his powers because Bruce thinks he could do a better job. And so at this point, Bruce is dealing, obviously, with the prayer request. And the funny thing is, in the movie, you know, Bruce is like, oh, you know, I can solve the prayer request of the world. I can help the world. And God says, well, actually, that's just for 3 blocks in Buffalo. That those prayer requests were from. And so then he goes on, of course, he answers all of the prayer requests the way people want them. Well, then the rest of the movie plays out with all of these problems because everybody got what they wanted. Everybody got what they wanted, like one, you know, how many prayer requests were to win the lottery. And everybody won, which means everybody made 17 bucks because they split among all the winners. And all these different things were going on. And the rest of the movie is just this plot unfolding about what happens when everybody got what they want. And so at the end, I mean, literally there's chaos. Everything is falling apart in the town there. And he prays and says, you know, God, help me again. And so he appears with God in this room. And they have this dialogue. And I love this line because everything is broken down. And Bruce is totally aware of that. And he said to God, he says, well, I just gave them everything they wanted. And God's response was, but since when does anyone know what they want? And I want to propose to you just kind of a concept to hang out there. Not that, you know, by the way, James Eugene Carey, Jim Carey, theologian. Anyway, by the way, yeah. So I want to propose this idea just it's okay, and I know this is not easy to take, but it's okay if we don't get what we want. And that's all right. And I want you to kind of be comfortable with that. And you have to be comfortable with that. And we'll talk about more why how this kind of all ties together. But I want you to get this idea. We all hurt. We are all struggling with issues. If I said, hey, does anybody have a problem right now? Raise your hand. I'd be willing to bet that all of you would raise your hand. And as I shared last week, you know, the severity of the problem really doesn't matter what you think about someone else's problem. It's how you see it yourself. And so something that someone else would say, oh, that's little, well, to you it might not be. So we talked about that last week. You know, don't talk about other people's issues and try to determine what's right and wrong. And if you weren't here last week, I encourage you to listen to it, mc3church.org/thepoint, and it's the first part of the Wounded series, because in this series we're going through the book of Habakkuk. So here's what I want you to walk away with today. We're hurting, we're wounded, and I want you to understand that when we're wounded, we need to hang on. We need to hang on. You need to hang on. Don't give up. Don't let go. Don't stop. Don't walk away. Just hang on. And last week, one of the things I briefly mentioned was this idea of platitudes. And a platitude is essentially well-meaning, and please don't misunderstand what I'm saying, and don't take this the wrong way with other people, but a well-meaning person says something to you to try to help you through it. You know, oh, I just lost my job. Well, praise God that you have bills to pay. Like, okay, thanks. You know, all right. You know, or something horrible like, my car is just blown up, and well, hey, at least you had a car. And those are platitudes. Those are those phrases that people throw out. And again, they mean well. People don't know how to deal with it. I don't know how to deal with it. I'm awkward. I'm awkward in general. But even when it comes to someone dealing with a tragedy, especially, and this is what we talked about last week again, if I haven't been through it, if you haven't been through it, it's really hard to be able to share. And actually, that's why I'm really excited. Next week, Brian Van Sayek is going to be teaching next week, because he's going to share just some of his wounds and the things that he's dealt with as we continue through Habakkuk. But this idea of hanging on, I want you to get that. When we're wounded, this isn't just a platitude of just have faith, brother. You know, all right, sister, praise God. I mean, and those things are all true. But I want you to just get that we can have faith. We can hang on, even when things are hard. And that's important. So we're going through Habakkuk this entire month. And if you have a Bible, a paper, we're going to turn on some lights. Sorry, the light bulb is burned out right there. I'll fix that at some point. But if you have the YouVersion app, just tap on Habakkuk. And we'll go through there. But I want to talk about a couple things. So let me recap where we were from last week. Again, if you weren't here, you got to download it and listen to it. But the gist of it was that things around Habakkuk were falling apart. There was an awful guy named Jehoiakim who was king. The people were not following God. They were not even following basic rules and law and justice and doing the right things. Everything was chaos. And these were supposed to be God's chosen people. And so Habakkuk cries out to God. He yells at God, essentially. He says, God, where are you? What is going on? Why are you allowing things to be so awful right now? And again, as we talked about last week, I'm going to keep reviewing a little bit, but you know, God wasn't upset with Habakkuk questioning him. But Habakkuk was crying out and said, God, everything sucks. Everything's awful. Everything's in bad, bad shape. Where are you, God? Why are you doing anything? And God answers. It says, Habakkuk, and I love this passage, look at the nations and watch and be utterly amazed, because I'm going to do something in your day that you wouldn't believe even if someone gave you a PowerPoint and sent you an app that would explain it for you. He says, I'm going to do something that's going to rock your world. He says, what I'm going to do is, you know how awful things are in Israel? Well, I'm going to bring in Babylon. Remember them? They're really, really awful. I'm going to bring them in to deal with the problem that you're having in Israel. And again, we talked about last week, like the Babylon, Habakkuk is kind of like, oh God, no. That's not exactly what I was getting at. I was hoping you would fix things and make them good, not bring in Babylon. Really, Babylon? They're like the worst possible people. They don't even care about you. They're awful. And so he complains to God, and God responds. And we talked about this idea of just kind of leaving it out there. When when we're wounded, this idea that God understands. That's what we talked about last week. And that we can go to God, and we didn't answer any questions. I just want Habakkuk understood, and we can understand. God understood what Habakkuk was going through. He knew. He understands. He understands what you're going through. And so I want to build on that a little bit, because now we continue with Habakkuk's story. So Habakkuk cries out to God. God answers, says, I'm going to do something you're not going to believe. I'm going to bring the Babylonians, these awful, awful, wretched, awful, awful, wretched, awful people, and they're going to solve the problem. So now we pick up Habakkuk in, where do we pick it up? In chapter 1, verse 12. But I want to, we're going to look at things from Habakkuk's perspective, because Habakkuk now comes back to God. God answers his first complaint, so he has a second complaint he throws out to God. And I want you to get this idea that when we can hang on knowing God's character. When we're wounded, we can hang on. And Habakkuk, this is what's going on here. He is coming back to God. And so let's just look at the verse, and then we'll come back to this idea of hanging on. He says, Lord, are you not from everlasting? My God, my Holy One. Lovely. You, O Lord, have appointed them. I'm sorry. You, my God, my Holy One, we will never die. You will never die. You, Lord, have appointed them to execute justice. You, my rock, have ordained them to punish. So let's just stop there for a second. What I want you to see is Habakkuk goes back to God and complains to God and says, no, wait a second. And the first thing he grabs is God's character. The first thing he latches onto is who God is. And I want you to get, and we'll kind of bounce back and forth this idea, but we can hang on. Habakkuk could hang on because he knew God's character. He was able to trust God through it because he knew who God was. And we can trust God through the hard times, not because it's all going to work out, not because all of our prayer requests are going to be answered yes, not because they're going to get healed, not because they're going to pull through, and you're going to get that job that gives you $3,000 a week, or that's not very much, I guess, an hour, how about that? That's good. You know, that quarter of $1 million a year job, whatever. We can hang on not because of any of the answers, but because of who God is. And that's what Habakkuk is saying. Lord, okay, God, are you not from everlasting? The Hebrew word here is basically, aren't you from before the ancient? Like, God, you're older than dirt because you created dirt. You've been around before it. God, you are forever. You are eternal. I can trust you because of that. He says, my God, my Holy One. And holy is this word that, you know, a lot of us, especially if you grew up in church, we had this idea of it means it's pure, it means it's without sin, and that's kind of true, and I've talked about this before. But holiness really means set apart and distinct. What he's saying is, God, you're not like us. You are holy. You're separate from us. You are better than us. You are different than us. You are distinct. You are unique. You are amazing. So he says, God, wait. You have been around for eternity. You are better than everyone. You will never die. All of us will. Habakkuk knew he would, but God would not. He says, you, Lord, have appointed them to execute judgment. And the them he's talking about is Babylon. He says, you've picked Babylon to deal out the judgment. The justice is the word. It's not just like, you know, condemnation and fire and brimstone. It's just the dealing with what these guys deserve and what their justice is. He says, you've appointed them to execute justice. You, my rock. Beautiful word. And we think about rocks. I don't know. When I think about rocks, I think about, I went running yesterday for the first time in a while, and I'm going to have to sit down here in a few minutes. But it was such a beautiful day. I went running in our neighborhood, and all the cinders. Like, I came home a little bit taller than when I left because there were so many in my shoes. But, you know, I think about rocks like that. But this word is not that kind of a little rock. You know, it's a rock, something that is huge, something, and the word has this idea of a safe place, of a refuge, of if there is trouble, you know, if you're in a storm, you can go to a rock and it'll protect you. You know, if things are dangerous, a rock, I mean, we're talking about something huge, the size of a cliff, a cave, gigantic, and he says, God, you are my rock, and you have ordained them, you have picked Babylon to punish. So Habakkuk, right away, as he's coming back to God and trying to wrap his head around the hurt, trying to wrap his head around the wound, saying, God, I don't get this, but I know that you're everlasting, I know that you're holy. I know that you're the rock. And he comes to his character and says, I know you've done this. And he goes on and says, God, your eyes are too pure to look on evil. I know that this isn't something that you do. This isn't from you. You're not an evil God. You're too pure to even look on evil. It's just a metaphor saying that he cannot even, like, the sight of evil in God's presence does not work. You cannot tolerate wrongdoing. You don't put up with this, God. So he comes to his character and says, I understand all these things. You're holy. You're forever. You're a rock. You can't deal with evil. You don't put up with wrongdoing. You don't put up with evil. So why then? Because I understand who you are, God. Because we've learned about it in church. Because, God, I understand that Sean once mentioned it and I downloaded it online and listened to it. So I know this about your character. I know that Greg and Wilson taught me this about your character. I understand that this is what I learned in Sunday school in 1967. But God, I get all that. But why then do you tolerate this? Why do you put up with this? Why are you silent when the wicked swallow up those more righteous than themselves? The word swallow up is the same word that talks about the fish in Jonah. Swallowed up, overwhelming, consumed, done, nothing left. And says, God, I don't understand what's going on. I don't get it. I don't know why this is happening. I don't know why I'm going through this. But I do understand who you are. I do understand your character. So I'm going to ask God, why do you put up with this? Doesn't make sense to me. But I think that even ties back to his calling God the Holy One. God, you're different. You're distinct. You're set apart. You know what you're doing. And I'm just going to trust who you are. And so that's the first part of what Habakkuk's dealing with from his perspective. As he looks at what God is about to do. Things are bad. And God said, oh, you think they're bad now? They're going to get worse. And God says, okay, Habakkuk says, this doesn't make any sense. But I know who you are. And so that's the first thing we can understand when it comes to Habakkuk, when it comes to our wounds, to our hurt. You can hang on. I'm not saying it's going to be easy. I'm not saying hanging on is not going to cut off the circulation in your hands. Your knuckles may be bloody. It might be tough. It probably will be tough. But when we're wounded, we can hang on knowing God's character. I want to assure you that God has not and never will change. And yes, he does love you completely. And yes, he does care about you. And yes, he does understand, as we talked about last week. And that's exactly where Habakkuk was. Please, don't misunderstand. Habakkuk was not like, oh, this is swell. This was a hard thing for him. And he had direct access to God, was able to question God, and his questioning to God came back to God, I know who you are. Doesn't make sense. But I know who you are. God, I know that you care. God, I know that you love. God, I know that you're holy. That you're wonderful. That you don't put up with evil. You don't create evil. So I'm going to hang on. And I think some of us, there might be nothing left. But hanging on to who God is. It sounds cheap, it sounds tacky, but it's going to get you through. The second thing, though, is that Habakkuk understood more as he questioned God, as he comes back to God. It wasn't just about God's character. He also understood we can hang on knowing our condition. And when I say our condition, Habakkuk, again, talking about God being holy and set apart and from before time, and he won't die, and we are not holy, we are not set apart, we will die, and it's all these things kind of a contrast. He understood who we are as human beings because we're not God. He understands that we don't always see things. He understands that perspective in Bruce Almighty that, well, maybe we don't want what we ask for. He understands that we make mistakes. And that's where Habakkuk was. He goes on and says there in verse 14, he says, God, you have made people like the fish in the sea. Now, he's about to jump into a pretty long metaphor here. But if you know anything about fishing, like I do, actually, I have been to the ocean. Some of you haven't. I've swum in both oceans, Pacific and Atlantic, not Raystown and Greenwood. But that's very much my extent of fishing knowledge. But anyway, he says, "Yo, God, you have made people like fish in the sea, like sea creatures that have no rule." He's saying fish are fishing, fish are swimming. They, you know, no one controls them. There's no like, "Hey, fish, follow me," and they all do their thing. And you know, as cool as Finding Nemo and that whole thing was. But the sea creatures, fishes do their thing. They school together. I understand that, but they're not organized into governmental structure. Okay, and he says the wicked foe. He says, "God, you've turned everyone into like we're like fish." And the wicked foe, and he's talking about Babylon here, pulls all of them up with hooks. And so you've got this idea that Babylon is there on the shore. And that's something you do. You turn a thing and do a thing like that. I don't know what to do after that. Like the hook part in the mouth, like that's where you call your dad. He's in Delaware. He's like, "What? I don't know how to do that either. I didn't go fishing." Anyway, so he, you know, pulls them in by a fish. So obviously, fish swimming along, things are normal, and all of a sudden you got a hook in your mouth. You were thinking you're just nibbling on some lunch, eating a snack, and you got a hook in your mouth. And he goes on and says, not only do they pull them up in a hook, but he catches them in a net. And the Hebrew word for net, not that you care too much, maybe you fishermen do, but it's this idea of a thrown net. That is used from on shore. And so this is something that you would stand on shore and you'd throw it out and then you pull it back in and whatever you've got in there is you eat, unless you don't. Unless you're in New Jersey, you never eat anything that you catch. Anyway, sorry, Steph, you're not here so I can make fun of you. And then it goes on to the third part. He says, and he catches them, gathers them up in his dragnet. And this is something that's actually used from a boat. You know, you might have seen a shrimp trawler or something like that, or a big fish boat that just drags the nets. It's huge. The boat pulls it along, and it brings stuff in. His point is that God, in this metaphor, he's saying, God, you've made all of us just like fish, and Babylon, you know, they're out there hooking and pulling us in. Aren't you going to do anything about that? But not just hooking and pulling stuff. They're using one of those little, you know, nets that grabs like, you know, a good dozen of fish from the seashore. He says, but not even like that. They're using this big old dragnet that's grabbing hundreds and thousands of fish, and pulling them all in, and that enemy, that foe, Babylon, they're rejoicing over it. But he understands, Habakkuk is saying, but he understands that we're all just part of your plan. We're part of what you're doing. We're insignificant. We're inconsequential. He goes on and says, then the Babylon, then therefore he sacrifices to his net and burns incense to his dragnet. He's basically saying, these people, God, I know that we're nobody, and I know that they're nobody. I know they're all under your control, but just God, you know, you can't tolerate evil. These people are going around and doing what they do, and they think it's because of their nets. They think it's because of them. They think it's because of their power. They think they can get through this because of how strong they are. They're worshiping, and that's what he's saying. They sacrifice to his net. They burn incense to his dragnet. At the end of the day, these fishermen that are bringing in all the good people, these evil fishermen, are worshiping their net and saying, "Oh, great net, you're the one that has provided such wonderful bounty." He lives in luxury, he enjoys the choicest food. He says, God, that's kind of what's going on here, and I understand that we're just part of this puzzle. And I understand that they think they're doing it. But is he to keep on emptying his net? Is he to keep on? Is Babylon to keep on just overwhelming good people? Is the bad thing going to keep happening? Is he going to keep on gathering more so that he keeps dumping this net out and gathering more and dumping the net out? Is that what's going to keep happening? Is Babylon going to keep destroying nations without mercy? See, Habakkuk got this idea that when it comes down to all of it, God's character is there and it's not about their nets. It's not about what we have. It's not about what we deserve. It's not about who we even are. We aren't loved because we're good enough. We're not loved because we look really nice. We're loved because God has chosen to love us, and we don't deserve it. And that's what Habakkuk is getting at. That's what he understands. So we got this complaint to God. God, I know your character. I know who you are. You're holy. You're the everlasting one. God, I know this is you. I know this is you. My mom taught me this. I know it. I know it. I know this is you. And I understand that we're just a bunch of fish There's this evil guy who's fishing and drawing everybody in, but he thinks it's his net. But we know it's you, God, that is really controlling everything and providing all that. So he concludes his second complaint. And again, if you weren't here last week, you need to listen to that idea about complaining to God and questioning God and all that, because we talked about it. But he goes on and says, therefore, I will stand. No, you're good. You're good. That was supposed to be there's an I missing. Habakkuk says, I will stand at my watch and station myself on the ramparts. He's referring to kind of using a metaphor of as a guard. A guard. I'm just going to stay at my post and I'm going to wait. I'm going to be looking out. I'm going to look out on top of the wall on the ramparts and I'm going to see what God's going to say to me and what answer I'm supposed to give to this complaint. He says, God, I understand who you are and I understand who we are. And so now I'm just going to wait for you to answer me. You did it once. So why, God, if you were this good, is this happening? And that's what Habakkuk understood from his perspective. He understood God's character, and he understood our condition. And that's why we need to hang on. That's why Habakkuk could hang on. He could make it through this because of who God is and the fact that we are nobody, and yet he loves us. That we are just fish in the sea. And God has chosen to care about us. But we need to hang on through it. A couple of weeks ago, Kendra and I went to Washington, D.C. for a couple-day weekend thingy. And it was great. We had a wonderful time. It was a lot of fun. One of the things we did one day was we went to the National Gallery of Art, which I know all of you guys were like, oh, I can't wait to go. Can you bring me next time? But I really enjoyed it. It was really cool. One of the cool things is seeing the actual paintings from the people you had to study in school. Seeing a Monet, Claude Monet. Seeing a Manet. And knowing that without enough money, you couldn't buy a Monet or a Manet. And I'm so funny. Anyway, seeing that's the real painting. Seeing paintings by Vincent Van Gogh, right? They're right. That is it. I could go up and rip Vincent Van Gogh's painting and destroy history forever and get in a whole lot of trouble. Destroy my history forever as well, and my future, and my kids' future probably, and anybody else that has any kind of a sense that is near me. It's not like smell, but dollar. Anyway. But anyway, and then one of the things we saw, this is a really interesting tidbit at the National Gallery of Art in Washington, D.C., that they have the only Da Vinci painting that is in the United States. The only Da Vinci painting is there. Most of them are over in Europe. I don't know if there are any in South America or anything like that, if we knew, if it was just, but at least in America, it is the only Da Vinci painting, and I saw it. And it was a paining. But it was cool. You know, this is Leonardo da Vinci, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle. I mean, come on. And I saw Michelangelo, too, and Raphael. Did we see Donatello? I don't remember any Donatello. And it was an April O'Neil, and I'm like, what's that all about? Anyway, but here's the deal. Like, we got to see all these paintings. And if you've ever taken a moment to look at a painting or watch an artist paint, they had these people that set up displays and were, like, trying to recreate the original to sell in the black market or something. But you know, there would be this beautiful painting of a scene. Sunset over mountains and you know, a cart. And depending on the era, there was probably some topless woman because it always seemed to be there. And somebody getting stabbed with an arrow. Those were two themes you see in a lot of them. But there's this whole scene. And it looks really cool. And some of them were just amazing, the way the light would pop. Like, it looked like there was a light coming from the picture. And if you go up to it, the picture, and look at it up close, though, they're just little blobs of nothing. I mean, not even like purposeful, like they're not perfect circles or anything like that. They're not, you know, there's no hard lines with a pencil and someone colored in. It says number one, green, number three, red. But there's just these blobs, these dots. And up close, these dots look like nothing. They look like a waste of paint. But yet there's a master that's using that brush, an artist, that knows that if I put this blob here, and this blob here, and this blob here, all of a sudden, there's a beautiful painting. And I want you to get this idea that when we can hang on, because we know who God is. We know He is the master. We're just the blobs of paint. And we think that this blob of paint, oh, what in the world? Why is this like this? This is awful. God, I thought you're good. God, I thought you're powerful. I thought you're holy. And God's back there saying, no, but you're part of a blob of paint that eventually is going to be a masterpiece. And we need to hang on. We need to hang on knowing who God is and who we are. And we can. It's not easy. Nobody likes being a blob of paint. Sometimes it's an ugly spot, but in that big picture, it's something beautiful. So that's Habakkuk's perspective on things. That's where he's looking at, God, why would you do this? God, if you are good, if you are holy, if you cannot see evil, why are we going through this? And then God responds again, not angrily, not mad at Habakkuk for asking him. So we get God's perspective on this whole thing. And the first thing when it comes to God's perspective is that we can hang on because God has a bigger picture. See, God sees things, like we see things from our own little perspective here about me and, you know, the people around me. And we hurt, and we're selfish, we know that. But at the same time, we do have empathy, sympathy for people. And care for them and are concerned when we hear of someone hurting. I mean, the church, that's what the church is all about. We grieve with those who grieve. We mourn with those who mourn. When someone else is hurting, we hurt. But we still see it from our little perspective. And God is basically saying here, you can hang on because God's got a bigger picture. God has a bigger, he can see things much bigger. Sort of like that painting. A blob up close is nothing, but when you back up, there's something there. And this is what Habakkuk responds to God. He says, the Lord replied, and now we're in Habakkuk 2. We've moved from the end of 1 to 2. Then the Lord replied, write down the revelation and make it plain on tablets so that a herald may run with it. For the revelation awaits an appointed time. It speaks of the end and will not prove false. So I'll just stop there. He says, Habakkuk, look, I'm answering you. You've got these questions about who I am. You've got these questions about if I am this, why then that? Now, I want you to know. I want you to write down what I'm about to tell you. The word revelation is just an idea of a message. And we talked about this last week. A prophet doesn't always mean that they see the future. It means they're a spokesperson for God. They have a message from God. And he says, Habakkuk, you're my prophet. I want you to write down this message that I'm giving to you. And make it clear, Habakkuk. Because as we talked about last week, Habakkuk, you know that what I was about to do, you wouldn't even believe if someone gave you the full-out drawing. You wouldn't believe if someone told you. So write it down. Make it plain on the tablet so that a herald may run with it. And this word herald is just like that. Someone that speaks out, that tells, that proclaims the message. Make it so clear that anybody can take it and run with it. I want you to understand, Habakkuk, that what I'm about to tell you, you need, and what I am telling you, make sure that everybody gets the word about it. And it's actually interesting, the Hebrew word in the New Testament, the Old Testament is written in Hebrew, the New Testament is written in Greek. The Hebrew word in the New Testament is the word for preach. It's the same word for herald and to preach. And he says, make it clear so that a herald may run with it. He said, because this revelation, this message that I'm giving you, this prophecy that I'm sharing with you so that you can share and you can make it clear, it awaits an appointed time. It speaks of the end and will not prove false. He says, Habakkuk, this thing is going to happen. This is going to happen. He's saying, Habakkuk, I want you to write this because I have a perspective that you don't have. He says, I know what the appointed time is going to be. I know when. And it's the same word that's used for festival or a holiday, actually. It's an interesting Hebrew word there. But the idea of, you know, ready? You're going to answer out loud to me. What day is Christmas? All right, thank you. Let's get a little more difficult. What day is New Year's Day? More difficult. What day is the 4th of July? Okay, what day is St. Patrick's Day? What day is Mother's Day in 2013? Yeah, no, I don't know either. I'm a pastor, and I can't even track Easter. Like, okay, when is that? Because that bounces around. But the point is, we know those days. We get it. We know, oh, Every December 25th, it's going to be Christmas. And that's the same word that's used here. It is a waiting and appointed time. God knows that day is coming. He knows that day on the calendar. He's got it circled. If it's Google Calendar, it's highlighted in yellow. Because it is there. He knows it's coming because it's a holiday. Or at least it's a marked day on the calendar. And he says, Habakkuk, you need to write this down because it's going to happen. I can see when it's going to happen. You can't. Because as you just mentioned to me, Habakkuk, you're just a human. You're just a fish. I just got a text. He says, but Habakkuk, I've got a bigger perspective. He says, it waits an appointed time. It speaks of the end. He says, what I'm sharing with you is going to talk about the end, about what's going to happen when this time comes. And it will not prove false. Now, this will not prove false is important for Habakkuk. If you know anything about, if you grew up in church, you probably perhaps have heard of one of the rules of prophecy. But if a false prophet shared something that wasn't actually a message from God, they would be stoned. And it had nothing to do with marijuana. They would be taken out back and beaten with rocks to death. So being a false prophet was something you didn't want to mess around with, okay? And so he's just clarifying, Habakkuk, look, this is going to happen, and it will not prove false. It is going to happen, and it will not prove false because I see a perspective that you don't. I have that date on my calendar. I know when it's going to happen. Though it linger, cranberries, anybody? You just have to let it linger. He says, though it linger, wait for it. That was cranberries. Yes, it was. Thank you. He says, though it linger, wait for it. He says, I know it doesn't feel like you're going to get through this, Habakkuk. I know it doesn't sound like it's going to work out, but you need to hang on because it will certainly come and will not delay. I'm never late. I am always on time. Habakkuk, you need to understand I have a bigger perspective. MC3, you need to understand that God has a bigger perspective. And it might feel like, God, when am I going to get through this? When is this going to work out? When is it going to resolve? When is the pain going to go away? When are they going to be healed? When is this marriage going to be restored? When is that child going to come back? When, God? I'm giving up. And God says, no, hang on. Because I know when. It's a day that's marked on my calendar, and it is not going to mess up. I'm not going to be late. I'm going to come through. So we can hang on because God has a bigger picture. The second thing that God responds, and this is nice. He says we can hang on because God does what is right. What is right by God's standards, not what is right by our standards. And what is right by God's standards is always going to be right, which I know is a circular argument. But he wasn't just clicking yes to all, because yes to all is us getting our way. Us getting through the things the way we want to get through it, and it's usually instant, fast, right now, and somehow we end up better after it. But God's working on God's timetable, and he's going to do what is right, and what is right is always going to be better than what we want. I shouldn't say always. Because if what we want is what God wants, then obviously. But get this, that we don't see that bigger perspective. And so we want this to be answered this way. We want this to be solved this way. And I'll tell you what, if God answered some of the requests, some of the prayers, some of the pouring out, the crying of my heart through some of the things that I wanted the way I wanted them, well, we wouldn't be here. I guarantee you that. None of you would be in this building right now unless you had to get your tire changed. Because the way I wanted things to work out isn't the way God had it, because he had something else going on. Because God does what is right. And so that's what he continues with Habakkuk. And he says, look, the enemy, Habakkuk, the enemy, the Babylonians, they are puffed up. They're arrogant. I know this, Habakkuk. Don't get me wrong. I understand how bad Babylon is. I don't think they're good. I don't think they're nice. I understand. They are puffed up. Their desires are not upright. The word there has the idea of a level. Their desires are out of plumb. Their desires are crooked. They are wrong. I get it. Babylon is bad. And then he says, but, and this is the most famous verse in Habakkuk, in case you cared. This is quoted in the New Testament, I believe, 4 separate times by Paul and also by the writer of Hebrews. This idea that he says, look, I know the enemy is bad. Evil people are bad. They're not good. I do not approve of evil. But the righteous person will live by his faithfulness. The righteous person, the person that does what is right, the person that loves me, the person that does the right things, the person that is interested in what is right, which hopefully we're in that category. I want to do what is right. We don't always do it. I know that. I totally get that. But if our desire is, I want to do what's right, I want this to work out, I want to do what God wants me to do. He says, the righteous person, how is that person? They're going to live by their faithfulness. And this isn't, I did not know this. We had prepared this series 3 months ago or something like that. And as I was studying this week, did not realize the richness of this word live. A Hebrew word is hayah. But it's probably pronounced differently than that. But it sounds cool when you say hayah. So, but it's not just like existing. The word means to live, capital live, capital L-I-V-E, to enjoy life, to have life anew. It is used for something that is being recovered, from a recovery, from an injury, to make well, to refresh, to fix someone that is wounded, to be rebandaged, and now living. He says, the righteous person, Habakkuk, the enemy is bad. I know that. You, Habakkuk, you, MC3, you will truly live not based on getting what you want, but by faithfulness. And this word means to be full of faith by your firmness, your steadfastness, your trust, your dependency. You want to live, Habakkuk? You want to get through this hard time? It's not through getting what you want. If you want to live, capital L-I-V-E, if you want to hayah, then just stand strong in who I am. Just trust me. You called me the rock. I am your rock. Let me be your rock. Just hang on. That is how you're going to get through it, Habakkuk. That is how we can endure. That is how you can make it through what you're dealing with right now. By faith. And I know, again, that sounds so cliche, so platitudinal to say, oh, just have faith. Please, that's not what I'm saying. Just have faith. It'll be all right. I mean, I guess it is, but I'm not saying it that way. Do you follow me? We can hang on not just because we need to do it. That's what good Christians do, and you never question God. We can hang on because of who God is. So he goes on and talks about Babylon and says, look back again. He is arrogant. Babylon is arrogant. They're never at rest. They're greedy as the grave. The word for grave, I mean, we're talking about the idea of death. And he says there in the next phrase, like death is never satisfied. You know, people never stop dying. Graves never stop being made. And that's how greedy these people are. That's how awful Babylon is. He gathers himself to all the nations and takes captive all the peoples. I get it, Habakkuk. I want you to understand. When you question my character and my holiness and my righteousness and how can my eyes look at evil, I want you to get it, Habakkuk, that this is evil. This is bad. They are bad. And I'm not asking you to understand why, because I have a perspective. I'm going to bring that date on the calendar when I am ready, because when I am ready is when it's right, and when it's right is going to be best for you. That is who I am. Therefore, you can hang on. So God gets it. God understands that when we go through hard times, they're hard. And God isn't sitting back saying, ha, ha, ha. See that schmuck that worked with you that was always cheating and how they got the promotion and you didn't? That's what I wanted. He has a mustache there. No, God's saying, the reason that schmuck got that promotion that you didn't is because in some way that you don't get human being, that I don't get, that you don't get Habakkuk, is because in some way I'm working something out that you don't understand. Because I have a perspective that you don't. So just trust me. And please, listen to me. I said this last week. Why do bad things happen? There's a lot of reasons. They don't always work out great. The guy doesn't always get the girl. You don't always win the race. But even in losing the race, even in not getting the result that you wanted, somewhere in there, God is working something that is good. Somehow, some way. Don't ask me, because I'm just a fish in the sea too. But God's got it. And that's why we need to hang on. When I was, and I shared this story with you before, but we've like exploded lately. So I'll share this with you again. When I was in college, I was actually, after my first, after I graduated from college, I worked at the Bible college that I went to. And I worked there for a year, and I was asked to lead a missions trip over spring break with college students. Now, if you know anything about spring break, which is actually right now, I believe, in Penn State, because we tried to go there last week or 2 days ago, and it was really crowded, or traffic. Anyway, off the subject. College spring break. Okay, spring break. I was leading this missions trip to New York City, to Manhattan, and we had all these little goals and, you know, Bible college goal kind of things we did, and I don't get into all the stuff that we did, but what was interesting about it is that on spring break, if you're in Bible college, the only people that are still around are the losers. Sorry, I know, and I was around, I was one of those people. But it was just an interesting mix of people, let's put it that way. You had a whole bunch of people that didn't have anywhere else to go, and that sounds really harsh. I don't mean to make it sound like that, but it kind of explains the context. So we had a lot of Central Pennsylvania farm people. I went to Lancaster Bible College. A lot of Central Pennsylvania farm raised, you know, I mean, LBC was right there. You woke up in the morning, you knew when they fertilized. I mean, it was clear. You had that wafting through your room as you were trying to learn and study. We had one building that was literally right next to a cornfield. It was awesome. And back then, that building didn't have air conditioning, and now it's like this gigantic mansion of a building. I left, and they're like, let's make the school really nice. But anyway, so I had all these Central Pennsylvania farm people, many of whom have not, you know, you don't know any Central Pennsylvania people like that, many of whom have never been out of the state. They were the ones kind of left behind. I also had the other major group of people that I was leading on this missions trip to New York City were missionary kids. And so many of these grew up in, like, Africa. And their entire life was there in some foreign country. So the point was that most of my team had never been in a city the size of Harrisburg. And I'm taking them to Manhattan. So when we got to Manhattan, I mean, there were some crazy, crazy things. Kendra and I were engaged. That was crazy. And she ended up leading it by default. You're like a student, too, but when you date the guy that works there. Sorry. She's so distracting. So we're in New York. There we go. I'm leading a missions team in New York. And I know that, you know, I'm not saying we're all losers and we're farm people here. But understand, these are people that have never seen a big city. And so I'm bringing them to Manhattan, one of the biggest cities in the world. And I remember just as soon as we, you know, driving in and kind of coming out, we walked around in downtown Manhattan. We had to catch a subway from one place to another place. And just watching this. Come on, we got to go. Okay. You know, just a whole, like, shock of this city. And I remember one of the very distinct things that were happening, there was an intersection, there was a street coming down, and someone was, like, walking across the street, looking around, and there was a taxi flying towards them. And they assumed that, well, yield to pedestrians. That didn't quite work out, but I didn't get hit. And I was like, get out of the way, and I had to pull him out. So there was this whole misunderstanding of what it was like. And he had sirens. There was always a police car going somewhere in the city and an ambulance and all that stuff. Things were crazy. We got into the subway, and that was a whole experience, just trying to explain, no, get on, the train's leaving, now get in, and literally pulling people into the train because they thought it would wait for them all to load. And just all these different nuances of a city life. And so to them, I remember having the discussion, what did you guys think of your first day in the city? Like, it's crazy. It's insane. It's noisy and loud and smelly and dirty and it's just so fast and just people everywhere. And it was this insane, insane experience for them. And then the next day, we went to the Empire State Building. And we got to go up top to the observation tower. And up top in the observation tower, the most you hear is, unless it's a really bad day, and it's like, but then they close that side of the building off so they don't blow you off of the building. But that's it. Just the breeze. And as you look down on this crazy, chaotic city, everything's peaceful, and everything is in a perfect pattern. All the roads are lined up. All the buildings are planned. The streets have lights. People stop, and then traffic moves and goes through. And everything is set up. The bridges come into the right spots. Everything on that city is perfectly planned. Well, as well as cities go. But it's planned. And so from up top, in the midst of the chaos, things are out of control. Why? What's going on here? But up top, you can look down and see that there is a plan. That things are lined up the way they're supposed to be. And what's seen, and there's someone is down there right now experiencing that chaos, but from the perspective I'm in the Empire State Building, that's why that's like that. And this is this idea of God's perspective, is that we're on the street. It's loud. We're waiting for that taxi to yield to us. And sometimes the taxi doesn't. And we get hit. And we get beat up even more, and it's loud, and there's just chaos and chaos. But understand that God is working something. I don't know what. I don't know how. I don't know if you're going to like it. But at some point, we have to not even care whether we like it, because God is going to do what's right. Because God has a perspective. Because God gets it. God wants what's best for us. And so that's what I want you to see from Habakkuk. When we're wounded, we need to hang on. When you're wounded, when you're hurting, don't give up. Hang on. Have faith. You're gonna live through your faith. Doesn't mean it's easy. Doesn't mean it doesn't look like chaos. Doesn't mean you feel like a blob of paint. But there is a master that is working things out, and he is going to do what is right. He is always good. And he's going to resolve it in some way that he thinks is best. Don't give up. Just hang on. I don't know how it's going to work out. I have no idea. But God's got that on his date, on his calendar. He's got a plan. And you're going to get through it. It's going to be okay. Not because I say it is, not because you're worthy of it, but because of who God is. Let's pray. Father, I pray, God, thank you so much that it's not about us. It's not about our ability to get through a situation. It's not even about us getting what we wanted. But that, God, we can hang on because of who you are. And I pray for each person in this room, whatever the wounds that they're dealing with, some of them are right now and fresh and raw, and some of them are old and scabbed over. But I pray that you would help us to hang on because of who you are, because we understand that you've got a perspective that we don't have. You're putting these blobs of paint together to create a beautiful masterpiece, and we are a part of that masterpiece. And so I pray that we would trust you through it. And God, I pray that beyond just some cheap little cliche or platitude, but that we would see we can hang on because of who you are. I pray that you would show us who you are, that you would show up in our lives, just a little glimmer, a little hint of what you're doing. In Jesus' name, amen.